Proverbs chapter 6, just before I give the numbers, let me make sure I have enough verses for everybody to have one. Yes, and more than one. So Proverbs chapter 6, and I have chosen the verses that we have to read in honor of a particular person in the history of Texas. Proverbs chapter 6, let's read aloud verses 12 through 19. Angela, since you're here on my left, would you start us? And every person gets to read a verse aloud, okay? Proverbs 6, verses 12 through 19.
A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth.
He winks with his eyes, he shuffles his feet, he points with his fingers.
Lewd things are in his heart. He imagineth evil at all times, and raiseth up contention.
Therefore shall his destruction come speedily. He shall be destroyed suddenly, without recovery.
These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, his soul abhors seven.
And so now it's verse 17 for you.
The haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and the hands that shed innocent blood.
A heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil.
A false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. So can you guess what person famous in the history of Texas I chose those verses in honor of? Yes, Santa Ana. Okay. Quiz. La prueba. Question number one, numero uno. Who was the Texas woman who led other Texian women and children in Bible reading and prayer while hiding from Indians in a thicket near her home? Please give her name. The Texas woman who led other Texian women and children in Bible reading and prayer while hiding from Indians in a thicket near her home. I don't mean she was hiding from Indians in a thicket. She was in the thicket hiding. Okay, question number two. Who was the first person known publicly to have professed faith in Christ in Texas? Who is the first person known to have publicly professed faith in Christ in Texas? Known publicly to have professed faith in Christ. Who was, according to our author, the most active and widely known Baptist preacher in the 1830s in Texas? Who was, according to our author, the most active and widely known Baptist preacher in the 1830s in Texas? Question number four. The first Sunday school in Texas, organized by Thomas Pilgrim at San Felipe in 1829. Was it legal or illegal according to the colonization laws at the time? The first Sunday school in Texas, organized by Thomas Pilgrim at San Felipe in 1829. Was it legal or illegal according to the colonization laws at the time? And the last question on today's quiz. In what colonial town was the first ever Baptist church in Texas organized? The first ever Baptist church in Texas. What town? Okay, friends, who was the woman who led prayer meetings in the thicket Mrs. Mossy Millard. I'm so thankful for how God worked in her in that. It's also delightfully fun having such a, you know, easy to remember fun name. Okay, first publicly professed convert,
Lydia Alcorn.
Is that a double L in Alcorn?
Yes.
That's how I have it down. I wonder if it was Alcorn. We don't know. That reminds me, you have heard about the new COVID-19 variant, the Omicron variant. It's striking farmers. Farmers all over America.
I think I've heard that one.
I think Angie made that up, or at least told it to me. The most active and widely known Baptist preacher in the 1830s in Texas?
Z.N. Morrell.
Okay. The Sunday school, illegal or legal?
Illegal.
Sunday school, illegal. Of course, to have a Roman Catholic Sunday school would not have been illegal. I was impressed in rereading that passage in the book at how many respectable, educated people were involved in that. Yeah. Not everybody, not the whole, exactly the whole town, but it was a large group of well-educated Texas settlers who did that, knowing good and well it was against the colonization laws. And as I guess I've mentioned to you before, if I understand them correctly, they knew that a government has no right to prohibit the free exercise of your religion, so it didn't matter to them by conscience that the government was prohibiting what they were doing. Okay. That doesn't mean it didn't matter as to what's going to happen if we get caught. They might have some concern for that, but was not against conscience to do that. And number five, in what colonial town was the first ever Baptist church in Texas organized?
Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still a town?
I think that Washington on the Brazos is not really a town that people live in. There's still a building standing there. It was the site of, we'll learn this eventually, site of the Declaration of Independence, 1836. Okay. There's some sort of memorial there, but I don't think it's an actual city or town anymore.
Where is it in Texas?
It's in the vicinity of Houston, I think. I'm not sure. The assignment for next time. Back to our Henderson Yochum book, which we had three or four times of not being assigned anything from that, would like you to reread chapter 20. Chapter 20 in Henderson Yochum was the reading assignment many moons ago.
We can't read it. All right, Henderson Yochum doesn't have 20.
Neither did ours.
Then betake thyselves to the internet.
Yes.
And find that on Google Books or something. It's right there for you. You have heard about the new internet, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called the internet because you can, it's like you throw a net out there and catch things into it. Mm-hmm. And bring them in.
Yeah. We printed it.
I don't mean to be making fun of everybody. Anybody just have a little joke? And study your class notes from today and study your official timeline. Speaking of your official timeline, today is going to be, may I borrow your pen, please? Is going to be a young men versus young ladies competition regarding the official timeline. Okay? What we'll do is, I'll give it to, one team or the other, and you'll have a moment to consult among the three of you, and then whoever's chosen by your team will state the whole timeline entry.
Are you allowed to tell, like, if you know what the person
yes,
is saying?
Yes, yes. You can consult with each other, and then one person says it. And if the person gets it exactly right, fine. And if not, the other team gets to steal. Okay? You can't have the same person speak for your team every time. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have to have it. Okay? All right, ladies first. So ladies, would you please give us the entry for 1825? Consult among yourselves for a minute. Choose a spokesperson. Who's going to be your spokesperson? All right, let's hear it.
1825, Baptist minister Joseph Bayes begins preaching in Texas.
Very, very nice. Very nice. 1 point for the young ladies. Okay, young men, let's have the entry for 1829. Have a little conference. Make sure you are all agreed on what it's supposed to be. Okay, who's going to be your spokesperson on this one?
I think I will.
Are you agreed to that? Okay. All right, Alvin, let's hear it.
1829, Lydia Alcorn.
You were allowed to confer beforehand, but now you just need
to... Is the first known public...
You have made an error already. No, don't give away any more to the ladies. Okay, so no points for the men there. Ladies, you have a chance to steal. You going to say it?
Yes.
Okay.
1829, Lydia Alcorn makes the first known public profession of faith in Christ.
That is correct. All right, another point for the ladies. Okay. All right, young gentlemen, let's hear the second entry for 1833.
Did you say the second or the first?
The second entry for 1833.
Second Texas consultation held at San Felipe.
No.
Well, I'm sorry
you have
added something that's not in there officially.
I'll send you the first one.
Yeah.
All right, ladies, you have a chance to steal here. The second entry for 1833.
Second Texian consultation proposes statehood for Texas and sends Austin as its delegate to Mexico City.
That's it. Okay, so the ladies are ahead 3-0, which basically makes you guys in a hole you cannot get out of. But I'd hate for you to have to go home embarrassed. So how about one more chance? You all, let's hear the entry for 1824.
Make it hard to concentrate.
I don't know how much time I have, so.
All right, let's hear it.
1824, Mexican federal constitution is passed.
Good thing that God made our brains to have short-term memory. So we can hear something and remember it for a few minutes. Yes, that is correct. Okay, so today, congratulations, the ladies have won So by a score of 3-1. Okay, friends. You are responsible to study the timeline and be able to say the whole thing from memory. Okay.
It was a little one-sided here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't really fair to pit that much brain power all on one side.
They're all older than us, practically.
That's right. Congratulations, ladies. I think evidently you have studied this better than the men have. So
we let you win. That's how we win.
So you know, losing at something and being embarrassed in front of everybody is often a very good way to prompt yourself to more efforts in the future.
Right.
Okay. I read something so interesting in the Henderson Yochum book that I want to read it to you. There was a colony led by a man named Beals and a man named Grant, the Beals and Grant colony, which failed. The people of that colony were not from the United States of America. They were from Europe. And they were not from Europe by way of the U.S. They were Europeans, it says. And one of them, after the failure of that colony, an Englishman named Kennedy wrote about it, and he wrote this. He said that it supplied further evidence of the superiority of the Anglo-Americans in forming colonies. The North Americans are the only people who, in defiance of all obstacles, have struck the roots of civilization deep in the soil of Texas. Even as I trace these lines, I reflect upon their progress with renewed wonder and admiration. They are indeed the organized conquerors of the wild, uniting in themselves the threefold attributes of husbandmen, lawgivers, and soldiers. Husbandmen, meaning essentially farmers. We want to understand the people who succeeded in settling Texas and be able to admire them and aspire to have some of their qualities. We probably don't aspire to be like every one of them in every regard. Okay, now I started into 1835 with you last time, and then studying for today's lesson, I kind of regretted it because there was really a lot more 1834 to learn about. So I'm backtracking back into 1834. Now, what year was the, which Texas or Texian consultation was it that sent Austin to the Capitol with their proposals?
Second.
The second. From what year?
1833.
Right. So Austin was in 1833 lobbying the government about statehood for Texas and repeal of that immigration law that prohibited anybody else coming from the U.S. to settle. And he was there through most of 1833, right? Free lobbying, etc. He then wrote a letter that caused him to run afoul of Vice President Farias. And so he was arrested, arrested on his way home, brought back to Mexico City, and spent most of the year 1834 a captive in Mexico City. We talked about that. We talked about Austin's experience and, through one of the letters he wrote and what he was thinking about what was going on back home and in the Capitol. But then I didn't really give you some of the important developments in 1834. So I'm going to backtrack and talk through some more things about 1834 with you. January to April of 1834, our state legislature met. The duly elected Cortez of Coahuila y Texas, our state legislature. Now, what year was our state constitution that they were under?
1827.
Okay. So we'd had our elections, we had our legislature, and they met January to April 1834. And they passed several measures that were going to be favorable to Texas. For a combination of reasons, you know how politics is always conducted for a combination of reasons. You know, one guy is really trying to do what's best. Another guy is really trying to get rich quick from his position of power. Maybe sometimes even in the same legislator, there might be those different motivations at work in him. Or maybe there's somebody who sometimes is doing what's right because it's right, other times is doing what he's doing because it's going to get him and his brother-in-law some money. So for, you know, whatever reasons, the legislature was doing some things that were favorable to Texas. One measure they passed established rangers. This was not exactly the Texas Rangers that was passed later after independence. But I thought it was interesting enough to mention that in 1834, the legislature passed something that would establish Texas Rangers. And they also passed a provision, and our author quotes it as this: "No person should be molested for political and religious opinions, provided the public order was not disturbed." You know how the law for the whole Republic of Mexico, the whole United States of Mexico, under the 1824 Constitution, as it already had been under the 1821 Constitution, is that the only religion allowed and required is Roman Catholicism. Well, here is a measure passed by the state legislature that could be considered in keeping with that, an interpretation or application of it. Yeah, sure, everybody's required to be Roman Catholic and nothing else. But nobody is going to actually be bothered for that unless what he's doing disturbs public order. So that was a measure very favorable to the colonists of Texas.
The establishment of the Rangers, I remember reading, but refresh me, it was mainly to fight Indians who were hostile?
Right, okay. Right. And then, as I understand it, most of the progress that was made by that legislative action was not then put into effect. The things that were planned, legislated, passed as law, were not actually established. Now, back in Mexico City, in the capital, you remember that Santa Anna was absent from the capital for about the first half of 1834. Vice President Farias was acting in his place and had Stephen F. Austin, Stephen Fuller Austin, in a very difficult prison situation, very bad conditions. And then Santa Anna came back to the capital. And in May of 1834, Santa Anna made a new pronunciamento and plan. You might have seen, you know how they would issue a plan and then it would be known as the plan of wherever it had been first declared. This place name, Cuernavaca, you probably saw it in your reading at some point, C-U-E-R-N-A-V-A-C-A, Cuernavaca. Anybody want to glance at that in my notes to see how that's spelled? You're welcome to do so. So May of 1834, at Cuernavaca, General Santa Anna put forth a new plan. Now, this new plan was, according to the analysis of our author, Henderson Yochum, it was a ploy to take power for himself, and the opening that he saw was some Republican reforms that the Cortes, or Congress, and Vice President Farias had passed. And one of them was a reduction in the military, reduction in the standing army. Another one was a law that limited how much money people could give to the priests, to the Roman Catholic organization. You might have noticed this in your reading. A person dying, giving money for the sake of his soul to the Roman Catholic organization, could not leave more than 1/50th of his estate to the Roman Catholic organization. And so there were measures reducing the army and limiting the power of the established church. Now, both of those are reforms that would be essentially agreeable to the Texas colonists, agreeable in theory to anybody interested in Republican form of government, reduction of the power of the standing military, reduction of the power of the established church. These were pro-liberty, and anti-tyranny measures. But of course, the military is a powerful organization. Roman Catholic thing is a powerful organization. So although this was passed by the constitutionally elected legislature and the vice president, it was very unpopular and threatening to the leadership of the military and the Roman Catholic organization. And so the analysis by our author is that Santa Anna saw an opportunity there. He had previously been flying the flag of a defender of the Constitution and Republican form of government, but now he sees that the Republicans, those in favor of this constitutional republic form of government, have offended the Roman Catholic organization and the military. So if he could gain the support of the Roman Catholic organization and the military, he could be in really good shape. So according to our author, that was what Santa Anna was up to when he made his new pronunciamento and plan at Cuernavaca. And it consisted of 3 points. First, certain laws that had just been passed by the Cortes should be declared void. Specifically, those ones that had reduced funding for the military and for the Roman Catholic organization. The second point is that the Cortes should be dismissed, dissolved, sent home, and another one convened with power to form a new constitution. So the first point of this pronunciamento and plan at Cuernavaca, certain laws passed by the Cortes should be declared void, and the Cortes should be dismissed, and a new one convened with power to form a new constitution. And the third point, this one I think is very delicious, Santa Anna himself as president should be sustained and supported in carrying this plan into execution. The legislature, they should be got rid of. But he himself, the president, he should be sustained in office.
He's pretty self-serving.
Oh, no. He's doing this for the sake of the country. Don't know how you could mistake that. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's May 1834. Now, remember that our state legislature had been in session just before that, January to April, and had passed several things that were making things look good for Texas. But now this, down in the national capital, the new plan of Cuernavaca. So as soon as news got up to our capital at Monclova, our legislature was gone home, their session over. There was a man and a small council left in charge of our state government, and that small group declared our state to be against the plan of Cuernavaca because, of course, we are maintaining that we are in favor of the Constitution. The National Constitution of what year?
1824.
Mm-hmm. And this small group representing our state government declared that they would not permit the troops of the National Standing Army to enter the state under any pretense. How do you like that?
Good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. We are against this new plan as unconstitutional, and we will not let any of the National Army troops into the state under this new plan. And again, this small group of men on behalf of the state government made plans for another session of the legislature. You know, it's hard enough now to assemble a state legislature. Back then, it was very difficult. You know, communication was slow, no email, no phones, very little. I guess there was no telegraph at this time either. That getting word out to everybody across this vast territory, you got to come back for another legislative session. The expense to do it individually and to host it was enormous. And so, I mean, compared with their resources. So it was a big deal, but they called for the legislature to come back, and they called for organizing the militia to defend the state, to maintain their constitutional federal system of government. That was, you know, the Santa Ana's new plan was in May. This little small group that represented our state government pronouncing against it was in June. But by a month later, it had gotten around that almost the whole country was going with Santa Ana's new plan. All over the United States of Mexico, except at one other state, they were all going for it. So, in July 1834, those few people representing our state government withdrew their opposition to Santa Ana's new plan and announced they're in favor of it. We are definitely against this plan. Everybody else is for it. Oh, we are definitely for this plan.
When was the date you said for it?
In July. May, the new plan was announced. June, they found out about it and pronounced against it. July, they found out everybody was for it, and they said they were for it.
Guess they were afraid of Santa Ana.
No doubt. Yeah, he definitely was getting his way a lot of the time, wasn't he? Now, this thing about who exactly is representing our state government, are we for the new Santa Ana plan, are we against the new Santa Ana plan, became the occasion for a renewed conflict between the two towns where the capital had been. Saltillo, where it had been, Monclova, where it was at the time. And so later that summer and on into the fall, those two towns, Monclova and Saltillo, not in Texas, you know, these are in Coahuila, where the seat of the state government is. They are fighting over who really is the state government. People in both of those small cities or big towns took up arms. They actually went to violence against each other, but not that much. A little bit of skirmishing among the armed forces of these two rival towns. And then they eventually made peace and some sort of agreement for a provisional state government, which was not according to our state constitution. And in the meanwhile, they were supposed to be holding the new elections, but they didn't. They basically couldn't, since the people who were supposed to be holding, organizing and holding the elections were all fighting against the people from the neighboring town over who was the capital. So by November or so of 1834, by the end of 1834, according to our author, our state government under its 1827 constitution was in fact destroyed. So there, you know, there was not any longer a constitutional government for our state by the end of 1834. There would be people claiming to be our state government, but as to the actual state government under the Constitution, it was gone. So there's a little more 1834 for you. So at both the national level or federal level, the constitutional government was in grave jeopardy. Santa Anna declaring a new plan, themselves at the head of it. And by the end of the year, our state government also in grave jeopardy or just out and out gone. Okay? 1834. And this is with Stephen F. Austin still imprisoned in Mexico City. Now, let's do head for 1835. The Mexican National Congress met January of 1835, and it was the new Cortes under Santa Anna's plan of Cuernavaca. Uh-oh. It was not actually the 1824 Constitutional Congress. Now, you already know about this from last time. They passed a measure to disarm the population of the country, including Texas. The provision was that the militia, which of course in truth is all the men able to bear arms, they defined it as one soldier for every 500 inhabitants, and the remainder needed to be disarmed.
Outrageous.
Good for you. Outrageous.
If I could, all the people would be a lot weaker after that.
Right.
Convenient.
Now here's from Henderson Yochum. I read this to you last time. It's so good, I'll just read it again. This arbitrary decree was a sufficient justification of Texas for her subsequent acts. Everyone who knows the Texans or had heard of them would naturally conclude that they never would submit to be disarmed. Any government that would attempt to disarm its people is despotic, and any people that would submit to it deserve to be slaves. Despotism is rule that is not according to such things as your constitution, your long-established laws, your ancient traditions. Not a rule that's not according to any of those things, but is just the rule by the will of whoever has power. That's despotism. And then when that kind of rule is enforced, especially by cruel measures, by cruel punishments, then it's tyranny. Now, those words despotism and tyranny are sometimes used synonymously, you know, to be referring to the same thing. When those two terms are used in the best developed political discourse, there's that distinction, despotism and then tyranny, the cruel enforcement of it. So any government that would attempt to disarm its people is despotic. Okay, so that's what's going on with Santa Anna's new Cortez under the plan of Cuernavaca. March of 1835, and Stephen F. Austin is still in confinement in Mexico City. The National Cortez, illegitimate as it may be, despotic as it may be, manipulated by Santa Anna as it may be, it was finally actually considering statehood for Texas. And so much did it seem like it would pass that Stephen F. Austin, in March 1835, wrote back home that the Cortez and the president, Santa Anna, were expected to decide in favor of statehood. The communication from members of the Cortez and the president to Austin for him to send to Texas was that they were expecting to decide in favor of statehood for Texas. Now, what our author, Henderson Yochum, says, analyzing this in hindsight, you know what it is to have 20/20 vision? That's for your vision to be just like it should be. You can just basically see perfectly. And have you ever heard that saying, hindsight is always 20/20? When you look behind you and see what has happened, you can see clearly what was going on. That doesn't mean that you can see clearly what's going on at the time it's happening. So our author is able to look back at these events, see how it all went, have all reports, and understand what was going on. Stephen F. Austin, from his prison cell, being told things, is not able to see clearly what was going on. So our author says, Santa Anna was temporizing, like from the word temporary, was temporizing with Texas through Austin on the question of statehood until he could get the country occupied with his troops. He was organizing to get his army into Texas while hinting to Austin that Texas would be granted statehood. You are aghast. You should be. Yes. Yes. When you learn about how Santa Anna did all those years, you should be appalled.
He's so smart.
Now, the state government of Coahuila y Texas, in the form that it had in 1835, had been empowered the year before, as you know, to do things with land to support the rangers. Their authorization to sell off large tracts of land, they used corruptly.
Mm. Wondered how that worked.
So that the land that was designated to support the rangers ended up sold off and the proceeds in the hand of the government officials.
Of course.
Okay. In April, our state government, having been found out what they were doing, issued an apology regarding the land deal, accompanied with several promises to Texas regarding colonization, Indian relations, the establishment of a college and other schools in Texas, and several other things good for Texas. Our author gives this analysis after the fact. Thus were the hopes of the Texans flattered while they were robbed of their land. And thus did the legislature render itself worthy to be driven from its halls. As you know, our state legislature, our state government as constitutional essentially ended at the end of 1830, by the end of 1834, but it was still existing in some form in 1835. Now, there were two states in the United States of Mexico that had not agreed to Santa Anna's plan of Cuernavaca. One was Coahuila y Tejas, as you know. The other one was Zacatecas. Z-A-C-A-T-E-C-A-S. Zacatecas. That's the people, Zacatecans. Let's see, where did I put that? Here we go, Zacatecas. So these two states were the two states that had not agreed to the plan. They were holding out for the Constitution of 1824 and their own state constitutions. And so, naturally, Santa Anna was going to do something about that. And what he did was send part of the army with his brother-in-law, General Cos, C-O-S.
His actual brother-in-law.
Yes, toward Texas. And he took the other half of the army and went to Zacatecas. This was going on in April and on into May. So here's how things went in Zacatecas. The Zacatecans, the state of Zacatecas, mustered an army and faced the army led by Santa Anna. But the army of Santa Anna thoroughly routed and destroyed the army of the state of Zacatecas, and then invaded the capital and pillaged and plundered and destroyed and burned, so that the state of Zacatecas was thoroughly subdued to where they were no longer opposed to the new plan.
Nobody was against anymore, because nobody was there.
That's right. Opposition to his plan was greatly reduced. Then
a few soldiers to do it.
Yeah. Then General Cos, his brother-in-law, took the other part of the army and marched to Monclova, the capital of Coahuila y Tejas, with orders to disperse the state legislature and the remainder of the state government. The governor called out the militia to defend the state government, which sounds like the perfect thing to do, like that Texians would be totally in favor of. The dictator who is ruining the Constitution, you know,
marching on
your state capital, your state government calls out the militia to defend you. Problem was, this state government had proven itself to be unconstitutional and despotic itself, and so the militia wouldn't come and protect them. Here's the note on that by Henderson Yochum. The public mind of the state, especially in Texas, was so thoroughly convinced of the selfishness and corruption of that body that the stirring appeals of His Excellency could not arouse them. So the state government of Coahuila y Tejas was closed by force April of 1935. And Henderson Yochum's word on that is, it fell by the hands of a tyrant, but unpitied by the people. Santa Ana and his brother-in-law doing what they're doing, our state legislature doing what they're doing. Which one's worse? We don't know. So we're not going to go down there and help anybody fight it out. Because, you know, it was also a long way from where the Texas settlers lived.
Wasn't even in Texas.
Down to Monclova. Wasn't even in Texas, right? Yep. So, in May, after both of those state governments had been subdued, destroyed, and Santa Ana was essentially ruling over all of Mexico, including Coahuila-Tejas, the various communities or towns in Texas began to form committees of safety. And this was a tradition from back in the original American colonies. Here is a, here's a town or, a farming community, maybe if it's not officially a town. And, there's supposed to be an organized government that bears the sword to secure your rights. Mm-hmm. But then, what do you do if that government is, in fact, becomes the enemy of your liberties? Or if that government just withdraws its protection from you? And that's what was happening in the American colonies. At some point, the king declared he was no longer going to protect them. It wasn't going to be the job of the British military to protect them from Indian raids and etc.
What did you say they were forming? What was it?
A committee of safety. Committees of safety. So the men of that community come together and elect some of the men to be a committee. And that committee then does some organizing as to how the militia is going to secure people's rights. And the concern in Texas in May 1835 was especially safety from the Indian raids. The Indian raids were very severe at that time. And so that's what they were principally concerned about. The Mexican army, which by the next year would show itself the worst threat, was still very far away from Texas. Committees of safety, and they would correspond with each other, would write letters and send messengers. Here's what's going on here. Here's how we can cooperate with each other. It's a pretty cumbersome, rather weak way to establish some sort of government for the securing of people's rights. But it's what people have resorted to when the proper government becomes non-functional.
Kind of, there's reasons there's better versions of that kind
yeah.
of idea.
So now we have made it to about halfway through 1835, summer of 1835. What year was it that Stephen F. Austin's colony was first begun? 1821. Mm-hmm, right? Now we've made it to 1835. Really not that long in years, but a lot was going on. Here is the summary statement that our author Henderson Yocum made. This is not a quote. This is a paraphrase of what he said. Santa Anna had established control of the clergy, the Roman Catholic priests, the army, and the Congress, or Cortes. He had become nearly omnipotent. All of Mexico, except Texas, was in subjugation. And he was planning and beginning to fill Texas with military forces for their subjugation also. He has made himself the friend of Texas, declared himself the defender of the Constitution. He has fed Stephen F. Austin enough information, concealed from him other information to, you know, convince him that he's for Texas, but he is actually just going to be subjugating. Right, he's actually just for himself. That's right. Well, I thought I had taken it down and put in my notes when it was that Austin was finally released from Mexico City and headed back for Texas. But I don't see it here. Maybe I only meant to do that and didn't actually. Nope, I guess not. So there you go. We've made it to the summer of 1835. And you'll find that in, as you go back to reread chapter 20, somewhere around the first half of that chapter is the things that we've been talking about today. And somewhere around halfway through that chapter, you can find it going on from there. And you can read that carefully, and a major point or two out of that hopefully will appear on your quiz next time. All right. Thanks, friends. That's all for today.